I don't know about you, but I have a particular favourite restaurant review. It's almost, well, it's a decade-ish old. A.A. Gill is the author. It's a review of La Milouie, a restaurant in Paris. Let me quote a few favourite bits. The waiters, he wrote, quote, saunter up and down the aisle like Vichy ticket collectors serving, after an agonising interval, snails that he says quite possibly arrive under their own steam. The tablecloths give the place, quote, a colonic appeal and the awkward sense that you might be a suppository. You may have gained the impression that Mr. Gill was not impressed by this establishment. In fact, he concludes, quote, all things considered, it's the worst restaurant in the world. Restaurant criticism, it's a thing. It's a thing you might read for information. It's a thing you might read for entertainment. It's an evolving literary slash journalistic form. What, though, are its priorities? Is it about the quality of the food, the decor, the acoustics, the service, the procedural concerns, perhaps, in a restaurant? Is that idea of the review evolving to, well, a more contemporary preoccupation, storytelling? My guest has a view on this. Theodore Joya is a writer. He's a critic, a food commentator. He wrote a recent piece in the Los Angeles Review of Books titled The Midlife Crisis of the American Restaurant Review. And he joins us now via Skype. Theodore, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's take the review back a little before its midlife crisis. You argue that the
birth, okay.
The modern review begins in the late 50s. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the modern restaurant review, at least in America, begins in the 1950s. And this is in the post-war boom with the rise of the middle class. And Craig Claiborne takes over what was formerly called the women's section of the New York Times and renames it the food section. And over the next few years, he starts to institute what we think of as the weekly review, with its kind of standard criteria of star ratings and critical anonymity and the idea that you need to visit a restaurant a couple of times before you pass judgment on it. And that sort of initiated restaurant reviews as we kind of know it in, you know, the public imagination. And from its birth in the late 50s and early 60s, we start to see some young critics, particularly Gail Green and Mimi Sheraton across the 70s and the 80s, start to push this genre in a new direction. The kind of iconic, snarky, kind of sharp, opinionating style that we come to is that, you know, A.A. Gill perfected was kind of pioneered by Green and Sheraton. And then once we get to the 90s, we start to see restaurant criticism really emerge as a real form of almost genre literature with people like A.A. Gill, and particularly in America, Ruth Reichel, who took over as the restaurant critic at the New York Times and started treating it as a more literary genre and also exploring a lot of ethnic restaurants. And that kind of is the short little first 40-year history of the genre.
Beautifully told, Theodore. However, that runs up against, movements in the broader culture in about 2018. And this is where the restaurant reviewer is urged to take on a broader, more socially conscious responsibility.
Yeah, the last few years have seen a real debate about the future of the genre. There's a couple of things kind of leading into this. One is the sort of just general rise of foodie subculture, which has brought all of this extra attention and interest into food. And, you know, also as millennials start to kind of move into this field, you start to see that kind of clash between the kind of older established writers who are approaching restaurant criticism purely as customer service versus younger writers who are interested in talking about politics, aesthetics, and what could be termed social justice. And in particular, two things happened in 2018 that brought these kind of simmering anxieties to a head. The first one is the Me Too movement. And in the aftermath of the Me Too movement, which started in late 2017, we start to see in 2018 a number of notable American chefs face allegations of sexual harassment. And that presents a particular problem for the kind of traditional reviewers. Like, how do you handle a restaurant when, you know, the chef cooks excellent food but is incredibly abusive. Like, how do you review that restaurant? Because it feels like it's pertinent to mention the fact that it's, you know, excellent food by evil men. How do you handle that? And a lot of critics struggled. And so there was a real call, once you're giving four-star reviews to kind of restaurants by people who are accused of beating their girlfriend, they're like, hey, maybe we should rethink this. And the second thing was that at a very pragmatic level, in an eight-day period in the summer of 2018, Jonathan Gold, who is the kind of iconic restaurant critic at the Los Angeles Times, mm-hmm. tragically died. And then I think 8 days later, Michael Bauer, who was the restaurant critic for 30 years at the San Francisco Chronicle, announces retirement. So all of a sudden, like, two of the biggest newspapers in America had these huge openings. So for what had been a white man's genre, at least in California criticism for the last couple decades, all of a sudden there were three young, politically conscious women of color who were now just the face of California restaurant criticism. And that kind of immediately spawned the sort of next generation headlines before any of them had even published a single byline under their new position.
The optics were perfectly arranged, and I'm sure the words followed appropriately. Why, though, do you think of this as a midlife crisis?
Well, when I started writing, I went through many different versions of this essay, and it never quite clicked until I started counting the number of years so the American Restaurant Review had been around. So Craig Claiborne started the a dining section in 1957, which is like very close to how old my dad is. And I'm like, oh, the Restaurant Reviewer is a baby boomer. That's what it is. It's a boomer. And now we have these young, and now we've got this kind of group of young kind of early 30s critics coming in, and people, and there's all of this debate and online back and forth about what the true purpose of the genre should be. So it just felt like it was the right way to frame it. And just the years came out perfectly.
See, I think there are so many things going on in this conversation, but one of them is, I suspect, the literary burden that shift places on the critic, the person attempting not only to write about the food, but to deliver some sort of a compelling social framework around that experience as well. I mean, that's a really high bar as a writer.
Yeah, and I guess I would advocate that it's good to challenge yourself rather than lowering the bar. And I think actually one of the most interesting things that's happened that I didn't get a chance to explore as much in this piece is that a lot of the people who are going into becoming food writers or food podcasters or storytellers or what have you of this generation, I think might have been literary writers or artists or reporters in the previous generation. So I think that there's a different type of person who's a serious creative person who is going into food because they feel this cultural energy there, who might not have done that in a previous generation. And accordingly, they want to take some more chances. They want to have some more freedom in what they discuss and how they handle and approach food.
Of course, there's an enabling parallel development there in the way in which the actual discussion of the quality of food and the consumer service thing, which was once done by the critics, is being carried out in social media environments and far more efficiently and effectively than perhaps critics ever could. So that enables the people writing about food to have a far broader palate.
Yeah, exactly. One thing we haven't discussed yet is just the elephant in the room is just the internet. And the internet has completely changed restaurant reviews and restaurant criticism because everyone can be a restaurant critic now. So the question is, if a newspaper is going to invest a huge budget into a restaurant critic, is the right thing to invest in a like super like platinum Yelp review or to invest in a more ambitious form of cultural storytelling and cultural commentary? And so that's where I think you see the desire for kind of expanding the horizons of what can be discussed in a restaurant review.
There's still a residual and nagging question in this, and this doesn't just apply to food criticism, but to critical conversations in all forms. Do we abandon the establishment of the canon, if you like? Do we walk away from a serious critical bar for the presentation and production of food, and we shift it? Given the internet and given social media and the ways that we now judge it, do we shift it towards a sort of a populist critique, or should we still be pulling back to some really foundation critical values around the form of food?
The way I'd frame it is that I think that there are many valid ways to approach restaurant criticism and restaurant reviews. And so there is still obviously a place for saying what's good and articulating why we should enjoy something, why we don't enjoy something in intelligent, well-researched writing and reviews. But I think that that should not preclude you from exploring other types of areas, other types of issues within food. You know, so I think that what makes food interesting is that unlike something like book reviews, restaurant reviews deal with kind of more practical everyday ethics in terms of how much you pay an employee, what's the environmental sourcing of your products, the creative process of making a dish. There's all these things that they deal with in a very pragmatic way, which I think is fair game for discussion. So I'm not trying to tell anyone that they have to write about food in this way or have to do it in this way, but I'm arguing for people to raise the bar, start thinking about other types of areas which you might go into in greater depth. Because I think what happens a lot of times is that you have your 800 words and you spend 600 on just describing the 10 dishes with the same 20 adjectives you always use and you call it a day. And that's not good enough.
Should the restaurant reviewer consider the moral character of a chef?
I think that's a problem for each critic to come to their own decision on. I think that the question is, when we as a society are faced with these certain issues, these huge moral dilemmas and quandaries, that's actually the key moment for a critic to come in and to think intelligently and with greater nuance about these issues. And so I don't want to tell any critic exactly that they can or cannot review this restaurant or this kind of, never say a kind word about a chef who has an accusation or lay down any kind of iron laws. But I think that it falls within the province of critics as the people who are paid to think intelligently about our culture and especially our cultural dilemmas to really think about this and think about it in the kind of greatest granularity. And I think that what happened a lot with the after the Me Too accusations is you would see like one paragraph saying, oh, I'm conflicted about this. And then 10 paragraphs, oh, the food was delicious. And the thing is, I would say is that like, that's not the right form for like moral reckoning.
I guess another way of looking at that is, why do we delegate that responsibility for moral correction to the food critic? I mean, why is that not a broader social responsibility?
Yeah, but it's the responsibility of every critic in their area to talk about how society makes meaning and talks about the real debates and anxieties of that culture. And so at the moment, the Me Too allegations and kind of general moral problems related to kind of bad behavior of chefs is something that is a preoccupation of the food world. And so it's appropriate for restaurant critics to spend some time thinking about that.
And in this country, that you know, systemic underpayment of staff is another issue with that similar moral dimension.
Yeah, I would advocate, if you're a critic who's interested in those questions, making it a primary part of your work rather than sort of like a throwaway paragraph at the end.
Theodore, thank you. And critics listening will be duly charged to take up that challenge. Appreciate your thoughts.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me.
Theodore Joya, a writer, critic, food commentator. We'll put a link to that piece in the LA Review of Books, The Midlife Crisis at the American Restaurant Review. Check that out on the Blueprint page of the RN website.